The headlines this hour: Israeli troops shoot dead yet another Palestinian in the West Bank amid heightened tensions in the occupied territories. North Korea's leader pledges to strengthen the country's nuclear weapons program during a high-profile military parade in Pyongyang. And the European Union says it aims to reduce its dependence on Russian oil and gas by two-thirds by the end of the year. This is Mies. It's good to have you with us. Israeli forces have killed another Palestinian in the occupied West Bank as the regime's atrocities take place on a daily basis. The Palestinian Health Ministry says 20-year-old Ahmad Ibrahim Awadat succumbed to his injuries after being shot in the head by Israeli troops. The violence happened at a refugee camp near Ariha early this morning. Since March, Israel has intensified its crackdown across the occupied territories. Palestinians have also been conducting retaliatory attacks against Israelis. Tensions also have been high at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, where Tel Aviv has increased attacks on Palestinian worshippers during the holy month of Ramadan. The daily aggressions have drawn strong condemnations from Muslim countries. From Ramallah, our correspondent Mona Kandil joins us to tell us more about the latest deadly shooting incident, as well as the recent Israeli aggressions on the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Israeli troops raided the refugee camp of Aqba Jabal, south Jericho, also known as Ariha, and they kidnapped, according to Palestinian Prisoners Affairs Commission, the undercover units kidnapped four Palestinians from the refugee camp of Aqba Jabal, and the clashes took place between Palestinian youths and the Israeli soldiers. Palestinian paramedics later declared that Ahmed Awadat, 20 years old, succumbed to critical injuries he sustained by live bullets at dawn. This 20-year-old Palestinian Palestinians would be taking part in his funeral procession in the afternoon hours. As you have said, the Israeli aggression to Palestinian territories had never stopped. Since the beginning of the holy month of Ramadan, Israeli forces continue, and Israeli police as well, continue to storm the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex almost on a daily basis in order to force Palestinian worshippers out of the Holy Mosque and its complex, as well as to allow Israeli Jewish settlers to raid this Muslim holy site and to tour it freely and desecrate it, of course. These incursions into the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex had caused, of course, the clashes as a normal response by the Palestinians, who insisted to face this aggression in order not to allow the Israeli forces or the Jewish settlers to desecrate the Muslim holy site.
Iran's ambassador to the United Nations says Israel's occupation of Palestinian territories must end to make way for resolution of the conflict in Palestine. Majid Takht-e Rawanchi said the full recognition of the inalienable rights of the Palestinian people is also a prerequisite for the resolution of the conflict. Iran's UN ambassador said the regime's atrocities against Palestinians amount to war crimes under international law. He criticized the current stance of the UN Security Council on Israeli aggressions, saying that it has only emboldened the regime to perpetuate its occupation and atrocities. Takht-e Rawanchi called on the Security Council to hold Israel accountable through all legal means at its disposal. The Iranian envoy condemned the recent Israeli attacks on Al-Aqsa Mosque, saying that any desecration of Muslims' holy sites should not be tolerated. Earlier we talked with journalist and political commentator Sir Mohsen Abbas. He says Israel is a remnant of colonialism and an apartheid regime.
The fact of the matter is, if you have an illegal occupation with a track record of the kind of violence, the kind of brutality, the kind of injustice that the Israeli entity has essentially committed to over the last seven or so decades, then its credibility no longer exists. I mean, there is no way that you can really bring to the table people who are essentially neo-fascists and who've essentially violated the rights, the heritage, the property, and the dignity and honor of an entire people. It's essentially an apartheid, a degenerate effort to colonize a land at a time when we're supposed to have no more colonialism. The fact is that Israel is the last remnant of what we would have known to be colonialism back in the bad old days. What we've got is Anglo-Zionist imperialism using Israel as an entity, as a platform for creating conflict and controlling the region's oil resources, controlling that region's resources in general.
Yemenis have held a conference in the capital Sana'a to support the Palestinian cause and to call on the free people of the world to stand by the Palestinian people, especially amid the ongoing Israeli crimes. Abdul Latif al-Washali reports from Sana'a.
Amid the Israeli escalation against Palestinians, Yemenis have held a conference called Palestine, the Central Cause of the Nation, in the Yemeni capital Sana'a. Senior officials have participated in the event to express their support for Palestinians.
The conference was held in Sana'a, the capital, which represents a symbol of a steadfastness and resistance in the face of those who normalize relations with the Israeli enemy. The Yemeni people are a living example of free people, as the central issue for us is Palestine. If Yemen was still ruled by the previous regime, it would have been portrayed as having normalized relations with Israel. But praise be to God, the Yemeni people have been liberated.
Organizers said this conference is a preparation for the celebration of the International Quds Day, as Yemenis will fill the streets of Sana'a to prove their solidarity with the Palestinian cause.
This conference comes as part of preparations for marking Quds Day, which will be unprecedented this year, as the Yemeni people will come out to confirm that Palestine is the central issue of the nation. The message that we are sending through this conference is that the Yemeni people, with all their sects and components, insist that the Palestinian cause is the basis for the solution to all the problems facing the Islamic nation.
During the conference, the president of Yemen's Supreme Political Council, Mahdi al-Mashat, called for forming official and popular fronts to support the Palestinian people and returning the Palestinian issue to the curricula to emphasize its importance for all generations.
Despite everything that is currently happening in the world and the catastrophic situation in the country, people here say they will never forget the Palestinian cause. They say it is the time for the free people of the world to prove their support for Palestinians against ongoing Israeli crimes. Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
North Korea working on plans to boost its nuclear force at a high speed in preparation for future crises. The country's leader Kim Jong-un says that nuclear weapons are a symbol of national power and should be diversified. According to Kim, North Korea needs to be prepared to deploy its nuclear deterrence anytime, noting that such weapons are primarily aimed at warding off foreign threats. He said that nukes could be deployed in case North Korea's fundamental interests were attacked. Kim made the remarks at a military parade on the occasion of the 90th anniversary of the founding of the Korean People's Revolutionary Army. The parade featured the country's latest intercontinental ballistic missiles. The European Union's Economic Commissioner says that the bloc is moving to reduce its reliance on Russian oil and natural gas by two-thirds by the end of the year. Paolo Gentiloni says that is part of a plan to zero the EU's dependence on Russian energy in 5 years. The bloc now imports 40% of its natural gas and 27% of its oil from Russia. This has spelled trouble for the EU amid tensions with Russia over the war in Ukraine. European officials have even warned that nations could face rationing of energy if Russia cuts off its supplies to the bloc. The Russian foreign minister has warned of, quote, a real danger of World War III as tensions escalate between Moscow and the West over the war in Ukraine. Sergei Lavrov said the danger of a World War III is serious and cannot be underestimated. His remarks came as the U.S. and its European allies are supplying weapons to help Ukraine resist the Russian offensive. Moscow has warned the West of unpredictable consequences if arming Ukraine continues. Lavrov said peace talks with Ukraine will continue, expressing confidence that the conflict will end with the signing of an accord. He criticized Kyiv's approach to the talks, saying that goodwill has its limits and will not help negotiations if it is not reciprocal. Lavrov accused Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky of pretending to negotiate. He said that Zelensky is a good actor, but there are, quote, 1,000 contradictions in his remarks. The EU's executive arm, the European Commission, insists providing deadly weapons to Ukraine is the right thing to do. However, there is growing opposition to the West policy in this regard over concerns that it will prolong the ongoing conflict with Russia. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
The EU and its Western allies continue to pour hundreds of millions of euro worth of deadly weapons into Ukraine. Speaking in India on Monday, the head of the bloc's executive arm, Ursula von der Leyen, defended this policy.
Our response to Russia's aggression today will decide the future of both the international system and the global economy.
Just last week in the European Parliament, a number of legislators questioned the wisdom of pumping lethal weapons into Ukraine.
If there is a ceasefire, who's going to disarm those individuals who are receiving these arms? We know how weapons sent to fight al-Assad in Syria ended up being used for attacks in other countries.
Also, it's clear many EU citizens are against the enormous militarization of Ukraine by the West.
If you send weapons, maybe you will encourage the conflict.
We all must hope the world need peace.
I think the peace is the best way.
Weapon is not the answer to nothing.
Poverty is on the rise in the EU, and so campaigners say the huge amounts of money being spent on providing weapons for the conflict could be better spent.
People are faced with the COVID crisis, you know, with energy crisis, you know, the bills of people are tripled or even quadrupled. So it's something ununderstandable.
But the European Commission insists the arming of Ukraine is not about prolonging the conflict.
The war can stop today if Russia decides that it should stop. It has nothing to do with the arms deliveries to Ukraine. Ukraine is only defending itself.
However, a growing number of civil society organizations and lawmakers believe the West should be prioritizing peace talks over arms delivery. Otherwise, they suggest, there is no way of ending this conflict. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Amid the COVID-19 pandemic, the marijuana business has turned into a flourishing trade in Canada, with more shops opening each day. This has raised concerns about the damaging impact the widespread use of drugs could have on society.
In a recent report by the New York Times, Canada's main city of Toronto was described as the Wild West of marijuana shops. According to the report, Ontario's provincial government permitted the shops by emergency order to keep operating during the COVID-19 pandemic, even during lockdowns. During this period, to the investors' delight, shares in the stocks of licensed medical marijuana growers in Canada have multiplied in price. However, the marijuana business was already expected to flourish, even before the pandemic started in 2019 and right after Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, to fulfill a campaign promise, introduced legislation to legalize the recreational use of marijuana in Canada. The prospects look good. Eventually, the Government of Canada legalized cannabis for recreational use on October 17, 2018. The Cannabis Act creates a legal and regulatory framework for controlling the production, distribution, sale, and possession of cannabis in Canada. Canada is now the second nation after Uruguay to completely legalize marijuana as a consumer product, in an effort to extinguish the criminal trade and keep the substance out of the hands of youth by regulating the market. However, growing, importing, exporting, or selling marijuana, particularly to minors, outside licensed channels, remain a serious crime. Meanwhile, critics of the cannabis law highlight the damaging impact to society of the widespread use of the drugs. When the use of cannabis becomes more widespread, the drug can also have downsides, including acute injuries and illnesses. In some cases, marijuana could lead to cyclical vomiting syndrome, a condition characterized by vomiting and severe abdominal pain. And also, those who use cannabis are more prone to mental illnesses.
Well, 2 years of repeated lockdowns and closures during the coronavirus pandemic has wrecked many businesses and pushed many shop owners to shut down. There exists an exception. Only in Toronto, the number of cannabis shops have increased over 35 times since the year 2020.
While many shops remain closed in Toronto, following several rounds of lockdowns and many office towers in the city remain mostly empty, the marijuana shops apparently have a booming business. They were permitted by the provincial government's emergency order to keep operating during the pandemic. In March 2020, during the early months of the pandemic, there were only 12 cannabis shops, but now there are 430 shops with another 88 in the approval process. When Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's government legalized marijuana in 2018, its primary goal was to create a more equitable justice system by putting an end to heavily racialized arrests, possession, not a major new business sector.
It's not a model which creates hope. Smoking cannabis, I'm not even sure it's an addiction, but it certainly makes you passive. And we need to change the world, we need hope and struggle. And the passivity of excessive, larger use of cannabis is a bad thing. And Canada allows it because they don't want the people to fight back.
According to a recent government-sponsored report, in only 3 years, sales of legal marijuana in Ontario have outpaced estimates of unlicensed sales and boosted the economy by $10.6 billion. Polls indicate that more Canadians consume it than they did before, 25% of people 16 and up.
China begins mass testing for the coronavirus in its capital to avoid a lockdown similar to the one that has shut down Shanghai for a month. Authorities are hoping that the campaign to test 75% of Beijing's 22 million population will root out the spread. Meanwhile, residents are stocking up on food and supplies, preparation for possible localized lockdowns. This is fueled by frustration among residents of Shanghai, where 25 million people are confined to their homes. Shanghai authorities waited for about a month and more than 1,000 infections before launching citywide testing. The city now has hundreds of thousands of cases and reported 52 deaths on Tuesday. And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of the speech delivered on April 12, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the government officials of the Islamic Republic. Even when people do not have access to an official to ask him questions and supervise his work, God is present there. Your work and service is like this. I have frequently said this to various managerial organizations of the country. I said to them that when they work an extra half an hour, no one might notice it. even your superior may not notice it, and he will not give you a simple thank you. But God sees this. The same is true of unfulfilled obligations and wrong deeds. The statement made by the magnanimous Imam, "The whole universe is present in front of God," is very important. May God raise the position of that knowledge-imbued heart. The whole universe is present in front of God. The Arabic word mazhar means a place where someone is present. God is everywhere. Wherever we are, whether we are alone or in a gathering of people, and even in our hearts, imagination, thoughts, and intentions, God the Exalted is present in all these places. The basis of responsibility is this, divine presence. This is the basis of social and political responsibility.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
You must know that the decisions that you take, the signature that you sign or refuse to do, the things that you do and do not do, are all done in the presence of God. And you were the watcher of what was behind them and the witness to what was hidden from them. Another point that I deem necessary to raise in this very friendly, warm, and good meeting is that even if you and I, who have certain responsibilities in the Islamic Republic, are like this in our personal lives, for instance, if we are not very careful and committed, when we enter the field of responsibility, we must be a lot more careful. For example, if you did not previously attach much significance to night prayers, recommended prayers, keeping a vigil and the like, now that you have become a manager, you must attach significance to them. You must strengthen the things that help you get connected to God. You and I must feel the presence of God when taking or abandoning an action. If this happens, then divine blessings will come pouring.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me. All the ways that were wrong, indeed you gave me hope. Oh Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You've guided me from all.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Violence at the Al-Aqsa compound has surged during the fasting month of Ramadan. It all began when dozens of Israeli military forces stormed into the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied old city of Al-Quds and restricted the entry of Palestinian worshippers into the Flashpoint holy site to secure the incursion of hundreds of extremist settlers to mark the Passover holiday. Regime forces assaulted Muslim worshippers inside prayer halls while protecting the Israeli settlers desecrating Islam's third holiest site. So far, at least 19 Palestinians have been killed, while hundreds more have been injured in clashes with Israeli forces. This has raised concerns about a slide back into the wider Israeli-Palestinian conflict, like the one in May last year when frequent acts of violence against Palestinian worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque led to an 11-day war between Palestinian resistance groups in the besieged Gaza Strip and the Israeli regime. But why is the Al-Aqsa compound a central point of contention in the issue of Palestine? Israel-occupied East Al-Quds, where Al-Aqsa is located, during the 1967 Arab-Israeli War. It annexed the entire city in 1980 in a move never recognized by the international community. The illegal Israeli control of East Al-Quds, including the Old City, violates several principles of international law, which outlines that an occupying power does not have sovereignty in the territory it occupies. Following Israel's occupation of East Al-Quds, a delegated status quo was agreed upon, with Jordan giving Muslims the sole right to pray at Al-Aqsa and Jews at the nearby Western Wall. However, Palestinians accuse Israel of restricting Muslim worship at Al-Aqsa while not doing enough to enforce the ban on Jewish prayer at the compound and even protecting the violators. The ensuing Israeli aggression against Palestinians at the Al-Aqsa compound is a flagrant violation of the status quo. Next, what has the international community done to put an end to Israeli violence against Palestinians? Well, the regime in Tel Aviv continues its crimes with total impunity, and the international community is silent, except for a few words of caution. The United Nations believes it suffices to express deep concern over the worsening security situation in the occupied Palestinian territories, saying it will probe into the use of force at Al-Aqsa. But is that enough? Perhaps the world's largest and most familiar international organization is too busy, preoccupied, or distracted with the Russia-Ukraine war, but the issue of Palestine deserves the same, if not more, attention since it has been ongoing for several decades. Thousands of people across the globe have taken to the streets to deplore Israeli violence against Palestinians at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound and elsewhere in the occupied territories, as the regime in Tel Aviv continues its crimes in Palestine. In Pakistan, thousands of people took part in rallies after Friday prayers in major cities, denouncing the Israeli attacks on Palestinian worshippers in Al-Aqsa Mosque as naked terrorism and urging Islamic countries to intervene immediately to protect the sacred site and Palestinian lives. Also in Bangladesh, thousands of people demonstrated against the Israeli onslaught. Elsewhere in Jordan, the protesters called for the expulsion of the Israeli ambassador and Amman's withdrawal from the Jordan-Israeli peace treaty signed in 1994. Pro-Palestinian rallies, however, have not been limited to Muslim-majority countries. Rallies were held in the US as well as European capitals such as Amsterdam, London, and Berlin. The protesters called for international action, including sanctions to end the Israeli occupation of Palestinian territories and the regime's growing aggression.
And so we're on a continuous upward trend, a continuous upward surge in support for Palestine and support for the boycott and isolation of the Israeli occupation and in standing with the Palestinian resistance.
More protests have been organized in other countries worldwide. One of the many online websites promoting resistance against Israel is Samidun, Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network, which has urged all Palestinian, Arab, and international supporters of Palestine to organize events and confront Israeli massacres and ethnic cleansing, events which are held by different organizations around the world.
Israeli military forces have raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied old city of Al-Quds as worshippers gathered for dawn prayers, with medics reporting
that more than 40 Palestinians were injured as a result of the raid. Local sources said some worshippers were trapped inside the mosque amid clouds of tear gas, with the regime troops throwing stun grenades at them. According to the Palestinian media, at least 43 Palestinians were injured in the raid. The development comes a day after as many as 30 Palestinians were wounded after Israeli forces continued their violent attacks against worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied Al-Quds. The troops used rubber bullets, tear gas canisters, stun grenades, and pepper spray against the worshippers, who have been braving increasing aggression ordered by the Israeli regime since the beginning of the holy fasting month of Ramadan.
Right now, the site of the mosque is sacred to three major religions, but the Israelis have no consideration for anyone but themselves and their own wants and desires. So right now, when they are entering the mosque, the sacred mosque, attacking people while they're praying, worshippers are there for dawn prayers, and the IDF soldiers and the settlers are simply invading the mosque, firing tear gas, rubber bullets, and live rounds of ammunition sometimes, all to terrorize and drive them away, because they want the site completely for themselves.
The series of raids on the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, one of the holiest sites in Islam, began last Saturday when the Israeli troops injured more than 150 Palestinians there. Israel's new campaign against the Palestinians doesn't stop at the occupied West Bank. On Thursday, the Israeli army carried out airstrikes across the Gaza Strip, targeting positions belonging to the resistance groups. Similar developments last year led to an 11-day war between Israel and Gaza-based resistance groups. The conflict killed over 260 Palestinians, including scores of women and children. The Arab League broke its silence on the Israeli raids on Al-Aqsa, calling on the regime to prevent Israelis from entering the compound. In an emergency meeting in the Jordanian capital, Amman, the organization warned that Israel's actions threaten to ignite a cycle of violence, and the attacks and violations represent a blatant provocation to the feelings of Muslims. But how will such declarations help defuse the situation when, ironically, countries that have recently normalized their ties with Israel, including the United Arab Emirates and Morocco, were in attendance at the meeting? People took to the streets of the Jordanian capital, Amman, in solidarity with the Palestinians on Friday, calling on the government to expel the Israeli ambassador and scrap a peace treaty signed with the regime. Such protests have been held in several different countries, but without a unified international response to Israel, the protests are unlikely to be enough to put an end to such violations.
The international community, as you mentioned, is not doing anything about this. It's so hypocritical to see the international community condemn the things that the Russians are doing to the Ukrainians when the Israelis are doing the exact same things to the Palestinians, and their crimes are supported by the United States and other nations.
In the absence of any practical measure taken against the regime, resistance seems to be the only option.
Russian President Vladimir Putin announced on Thursday that Russian forces have won the battle for the strategic southern city of Mariupol. Russian forces appear to be in control of the city, including its important but now seriously damaged port. At a joint appearance with his defense minister Sergei Shoigu, Putin declared that, quote, the completion of combat work to liberate Mariupol is a success. The Russian president offered congratulations to Shoigu and Russian forces. But what is the strategic significance of the latest developments of the war? Mariupol is a major port in Ukraine's eastern Donbass region. It is situated between areas held by pro-Russian forces in Ukraine and Crimea, the Black Sea Peninsula that came under Russian control in 2014. Taking the city now will allow Russia to connect the two areas as it steps up its military campaign in Ukraine's east. Moscow can now secure more of the southern coastline, complete a land bridge between Russian soil and the Crimean Peninsula, and free up more troops to join the battle for Donbass, which is Ukraine's eastern industrial heartland. Despite Russia's announcement of victory in Mariupol, hundreds of Ukrainian troops and civilians are still holding out inside a giant steel factory in the city. Russian forces have tried for weeks to dislodge them, but to no avail. The Kremlin says there is no need for Russian troops to enter the complex passageways of the sprawling Azovstal steelworks. The Russian president ordered his forces to block off the industrial area so that, quote, not even a fly can get through. Ukraine and its Western allies have disputed Russia's claim of complete victory in the city. But Moscow seems to be already looking beyond the southern city. Russian officials say the war's main objective is now capturing the mostly Russian-speaking Donbass region. Last month, Russian forces were driven away from the capital Kiev and northern Ukraine. Things will definitely not be smooth in the east either, as Western nations rush to funnel heavy arms into Ukraine to help it counter the offensive.
The Ukrainian armed forces were trained by NATO, equipped by NATO, and trained to the standards of NATO. So that is a major factor as to why the Ukrainian armed forces have put up stiff resistance to the Russian army.
U.S. President Joe Biden has announced another $800 million to help Ukrainian forces fight in the east. He said this week that Washington and its allies are moving as fast as possible to provide Kiev with the weapons that it needs. According to Biden, the U.S. and its allies are facing a critical window of time where they are going to set the stage for the next phase of this war. Much is at stake in Ukraine for major world powers. The war has been widely described as an escalation of the never-ending tug of war between the West and the Russian Federation. The outcome of the conflict could have far-reaching consequences and may shift the balance of power in the region and beyond.
The war in Ukraine is raging on. Russia's military operation in Ukraine is entering a new phase, which is focused on eastern Ukraine as the opposing troops remain locked in combat along a 300-mile front line. The Russian Defense Ministry has given the Ukrainian forces an ultimatum to lay down their arms. Ukraine has reached a preliminary agreement with Russia to evacuate civilians. But the United States and its allies seem to be determined to prolong the war. U.S. President Joe Biden is expected to announce within the coming days another military aid package for Ukraine, about the same size as the $800 million one announced last week. It will include artillery systems, artillery rounds, armored personnel carriers, and unmanned coastal defense boats. It would bring the total U.S. military aid to Ukraine since the Russian military offensive in February to well over $3 billion U.S. dollars. Kiev has called for additional weapons and support to stave off Moscow's new offensive in the eastern Donbas region, where Russian forces have been amassing after their withdrawal from the Ukrainian capital. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau also said Canada would be sending heavy artillery and promised to provide more details. There are some reports that the US is using the Ukraine conflict to prepare for wars against Russia and China. The US military is training to fight in an environment heavily shaped by the Russian military campaign against Ukraine that was launched about 2 months ago. The purpose of this month's war game in California is to prepare for future wars against Russia and China. The report said the role players in the exercise at the Fort Irwin National Training Center in the Mojave Desert speak Russian. About 4,500 soldiers from the 2nd Brigade, 1st Cavalry Division are pitted against the fictional Devonian forces, the exercise's apparent stand-in for the Russians. The enemy fires rockets and missiles in the drill, all while using a sophisticated disinformation campaign to make false accusations against U.S. troops.
So I think that the United States, the U.S. corporations, the U.S. government, the officials within United States politics and economics have their head on straight enough to know that an open war with Russia is against their profit motive, is against their motive for world domination, because there simply would be no world left to dominate.
The U.S. has also warned China that it will face consequences if it helps Russia evade sanctions in its invasion of Ukraine. China has so far refrained from condemning Russia for the invasion and has said Moscow's legitimate security concerns should be taken seriously. There has also been growing tensions between Beijing and Washington and its allies in the Asia-Pacific region, including over Taiwan and the South China Sea. The Pentagon and U.S. lawmakers cited countering China in passing this year's $777.7 billion defense budget.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره، همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام: كل معاجل يسأل الإنذار، وكل مؤجل يتعلل بالتسويف.
Imam Ali said, "He whom death overtakes early seeks time, while he whose death is deferred puts forth excuses for the postponement of doing good actions." Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program's To My Brother, and we're discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. So, dear friends, when we're talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam, the first divinely appointed Imam, the living miracle of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household, we find that the words of wisdom that Imam Ali alayhi salam gave to the world and gifted to the world is such that it is applicable to each and every person upon this earth. And what is even more beautiful about this idea of the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam is the fact that this persona and this character and this personality is not limited by time. So what I'm trying to say is that despite the passing of well over 1,000 years, we find that the universal persona of Imam Ali is truly applicable to our time. One of the interesting and beautiful things that we learn from this universal persona of Imam Ali is this idea that generosity has its roots in man's dignity. So, of course, when a person is dignified, when a person has self-respect, and when an individual realizes the self-respect and the dignity of others, they become generous. Now, sometimes it might happen that we are generous with people, but then we go and, you know, we brag about it to them, or we try to make them feel like we did a favor upon them. Now, what is interesting is that holding a person under obligation for one's generosity is contrary to a human being's greatness. And of course, this is the statement from His Eminence Imam Ali alayhi salam. If you are generous with an individual, if you give charity or if you give sadaqah, charity, alms tax, zakat, the Islamic tax, or you help somebody in need, any kind of form of generosity, excuse me, stems from a human being's dignity. And of course, to hold another individual under obligation because of your generosity is a very bad virtue. It is a evil virtue, and it is something that is contrary to the appropriate and correct behaviors and morals that the beautiful religion of Islam has taught us. Again, a beautiful and profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم إني أسألك الأمان يوم لا ينفع مال ولا بنون إلا من أتى الله بقلب سليم.
O Allah, I ask you for the protection of the day when property will not avail, nor sons except he who comes with a heart free from evil.
وأسألك الأمان يوم يعض الظالمون يقول يا ليتني اتخذت مع الرسول سبيلا.
And I ask you for protection on the day when the unjust one will bite his hands, saying, Oh, would that I had taken away with the messenger.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general whether a muslim non-muslim or even a disbeliever respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib. This means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
We invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
So we have Ali ibn Abi Talib, man 'indahu ilm al-kitab,
on that level, just second person in the universe after Rasulullah. And so the person who kills him, Rasulullah, in the khutbah that I presented yesterday, describes Ibn Muljim as Ashqul Awwaleen wal Akhireen. Ali had the Ilmul Awwaleen wal Akhireen. And the person who killed Ali was the most wretched of all the ummas who came before and who came later on. Shaqawat, this is opposite of sa'adat. Sa'adat means to be fortunate, to be blessed by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Shaqawat is the opposite of that. And the reason why Ibn Muljim was such, because he had a heart which was filled with the hatred of Ali ibn Abi Talib. And Rasulullah had said that, O Ali, nobody will love you but a mu'min and nobody will hate you but a munafiq. Yet Ali was even just, more than just, kind with his own, you know, killer. We talked about it yesterday also, the night before also. A person who has been struck right there is going through the pain, trying to hold the blood from coming out. You know, Hassan al-Mushtaba is carrying has placed the head of the father on his lap. And at that time, Ibn Muljim comes. Any normal human being, the reaction would be to express hatred towards that person. But what does this Imam of Adil do? No, not the Imam of Adil. He is the Imam of Rahmah. He is the Imam of Ra'fa. He is the kind and merciful Imam. Says to his son Hassan, that look at him. Look at his face. Look at his eyes. You can see fear. Because of course, everybody were cursing him. People are trying to beat him at that time. And he says, oh my son, I advise you to treat him also. He is your prisoner now. He is your asir. Treat him with kindness. Especially make sure that you do not forget his meals and his food.
Listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, and welcome to the latest edition of Palestine Declassified, where we investigate the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. The past week has seen repeated Zionist incursions into the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Al-Quds. Worshippers have been refused access, locked in, assaulted, attacked and arrested. The Jewish settlers who attacked worshippers and desecrated Al-Aqsa were protected by armed Zionist police and military personnel. And these outrages are occurring during the holy month of Ramadan, when Muslims traditionally flock to Al-Aqsa to pray. So in today's programme, we'll examine the response of the Palestinians to these events and look in depth at the state of the resistance to the Zionist colony. We'll also highlight the importance of Al-Quds Day, which is traditionally marked on the last Friday of Ramadan and is an important fixture in the international calendar of resistance. As always, I'll be speaking to experts on this issue to find out more. But first, we've got this special report by Latifa Abu Chakra on how Palestine resists occupation.
The Palestinians have faced over 100 years of Zionist settler colonialism and resisted every step of the way. They have shown endless courage.